It is my great pleasure to introduce our esteemed colleagues today. Our first presenter is Dr. Elizabeth, or Liz, Reifschneider. She is a women's health nurse practitioner and researcher. She's the, She's a professor at the College of Nursing at Arizona State University. What I'd like to tell you about Liz before I read her bio that she gave is that Liz has been a public health nurse since the 70s. Although she's very well preserved, as you can tell, just much like my mother. She was in the hospital for a short period of time and realized that public health nursing was her calling. She worked for the Department of Health in Oklahoma, where she did reproductive medicine, and she was in a cohort. The department realized that there was a need in those rural areas for reproductive health in women, and so she actually did her training with medical students. That's how she got her women's health nurse practitioner, and then went on to get numerous degrees. But Elizabeth conducts research studies including descriptive, intervention, and evaluation research. I've already told you she's a women's health nurse practitioner, she's a community health clinical nurse specialist, and a member of the American Academy of Nursing, where she sits on the breastfeeding expert panel. She has published numerous articles on contraceptive and pap smear screening, among other scholarly works, along with peer counselors in breastfeeding. And just a few minutes ago, at our public health nursing luncheon, for those of you who were not there, Liz was awarded the Ruth B. Freeman Award, which is a very distinguished honor. Well, maybe we could give her a little round of applause. So, Liz.
Thank you, Lisa. I appreciate all that. I guess when Lisa found that out about my background in women's health, how I became an advanced practice nurse, from Sunday night when we were, after the historical celebration, and I was telling her, talking about history, I started in public health in 1976. Like I said, I graduated with my BSN in 75, and as soon as the health department would take me, I went over there and started in public health, and I loved the ability to set my own schedule and have my own district and make my home visits and have my families and my community. I worked with schools, I worked with churches. I just, loved that whole approach. And I noticed we had family planning clinics in these rural health departments. This is in Oklahoma, some rural areas of Oklahoma, and they were staffed by physicians, but there wasn't enough physicians in some of these small areas. So the public health nurses who were willing, the health department had an arrangement with the College of Medicine, which was right next door, the state health department. And so the public health nurses would go to Oklahoma City and go through the OB-GYN rotation with the medical students. So I was one of those selected, and I had 2 weeks before that to get boned up on anatomy, physiology, endocrinology, and then boom, I took medical school classes for 6 weeks with the OB-GYN, with the medical students, and did the clerkship with them and, the rounds and lectures and everything like that. And then another couple of weeks after that, just sort of practicing some more in clinics, and boom, back out to my counties. And so, nurse practitioner with about 8 to 9 weeks of education. And let me tell you, that was something else. And so I was one of the pioneer nurse practitioners, and I really, it was due to the backup physicians I had that helped me out, both the family practice and the OB-GYNs who would, I would call them with issues and problems, and that was a big help. And then all the reading, it was basically I started teaching myself. I read everything I could to learn. And so it's great fun for me to see where advanced practice has gone. But I've always kept my roots in public health, because even when I'm not actively employed in a public health agency as a full-time public health nurse, I've always had a faculty practice as a faculty, And I usually practice about one day a week or a half a day a week, something like that, at almost always at a Title X funded clinic, which, as you know, all of those who know family planning, the Title X is the federal program that's pretty much given through block grants to state health departments or some other type of system to fund family planning for low-income women. And so I've got a long, long history in that, and that's how I practice public health and then from that out into the community. So I just love being able to keep my feet in the practice. So this came about because currently in Phoenix, Arizona, the College of Nursing there started their nurse family partnership. Excuse me, I have no financial relationships to disclose. They started their program more than 20 years ago. And the mission of NP Grace is to provide comprehensive, accessible, culturally acceptable, reproductive health care to underserved populations in Phoenix and the surrounding area, educational experiences for undergraduate and graduate students, and opportunities for faculty practice and research. This is what it looks like. NP Grace is what we call it, ASU NP Healthcare Grace. This is a Title X funded, nurse-managed clinic located in the heart of Phoenix, heart of downtown Phoenix at Grace Lutheran Church. It's like across the street from the large, a large open park where there's the central library, and so we have homeless people all around us, and this is part of a church. This church actually is Grace Lutheran Church, and they have given us the loan of the educational wing that they no longer use, and so that's where we have our clinic. And the clinic staff we have, two medical students and one clinic manager. They're all bilingual, bicultural, and we serve people, men and women, who have no insurance and meet the federal poverty guidelines. And so if they have any insurance or any other resources at all, we don't see them. But we really stay busy there at the clinic because we serve a large population of probably undocumented, but we don't ask. We don't care about papers at all. So NP Grace started in 1991 as a nurse-managed mobile pediatric practice supported by state tobacco tax settlement funds. So the College of Nursing there at ASU has had this focus for 23 years of being strong nurse-driven nurse-managed clinics, and I think it was the first nurse-managed clinic in the nation. So that's got deep roots there. And in 2001, the focus changed to family planning, from pediatric practice to family planning, and so NP Grace is now a Title X funded nurse-managed clinic. And Denise Link, who is one of my co-authors, is the she's the one that writes the Title X grants. She's the one that manages the money, manages the grant, works with our collaborating professionals, physicians, chairs our advisory committee. She's a clinical associate professor. So her practice and her educational practice is largely running this clinic, but then it's also available for students. The practice model is a collaboration among state and federal government entities and the nonprofit agency and a faith-based organization. I've already told you about Grace Lutheran Church. The clinic partners include Arizona Family Health Partnership. This is how Arizona had the foresight to set up the Title X Fund. Arizona Family Health Partnership is the nonprofit agency that gets the Title X funds from the government. So it doesn't go through the Arizona legislature, and it doesn't go through the Arizona governor's office. So that means we don't have a lot of foolishness going on with our Title X funds, if I can, because I was talking to my colleagues in Texas, and they said that the governor there cut out $80 million of family planning funding. So that hasn't happened as much in Arizona. Of course, it's been cut back some just because the federal government's been cut back some. But we haven't wiped out family planning funds because it goes to a nonprofit private entity. And then Grace Lutheran Church provides space for the clinic. The clinic staff, like I said, we serve men, women, adolescents. They're all uninsured or enrolled in Medicaid. We're going to start billing Medicaid. We've gone through a long process to be able to do that. And, of course, it's staffed by nurse practitioners. And Arizona has one of the more liberal nurse practitioner practice acts, where we are able, you know, once we're licensed and approved by the state, we can prescribe. Basically, we don't have, you know, very much limitation on our prescribing practices. And so, you know, whatever we feel like within our scope of practice, we can serve, we can provide. And so we provide family planning services. We also do sports physicals, which I enjoy a lot with those, you know, young people coming in to get their physicals before they go to school. So we have hundreds of health professional students, graduate, undergraduate nurses, physicians, pharmacists, health education majors, social workers, bioinformatics, foreign nursing students. We've had them all come through. And this fall, I think next month, we are going to have a family practice resident come back for her second rotation through our clinic because she enjoys working with us so much and she needs more IUD practice, which she's not getting in her family practice residency. So she'll learn that some more from us. Denise Link is our clinic director. She's a PhD nurse practitioner, clinical associate professor. Like I said, she oversees everything. She writes the grants. She manages the money. You know, it's really a nice position for a faculty to have that much control over the clinic. And I'm one of the faculty volunteers. Sue Sarsom is a nurse midwife who also works at the College of Nursing and volunteers. And we also operate as a recruitment site for many of the students from the College of Nursing and some of the faculty. These are some of the recent studies that I've helped facilitate. I'm also the Associate Dean for Research at the College of Nursing and Health Innovation at Arizona State University. I'm still learning my Arizona institutions. But so I facilitate some of these research programs, like teens and HIV, HPV prevention, physical activity preferences, Latina women, adaptation of the home scale for adolescents 16 to 20 years of age. I don't know if any of you are familiar with the home observation for measurement and the environment scale. It's a well-used tool by public health nurses, by Betty Caldwell and Robert Bradley. But Robert Bradley is a professor of psychology there at Arizona State University, and he's interested in adapting the home scale, which was created for basically birth to three-year-old children, adapting it to teens, older teen families, and especially with Spanish-speaking families. And so he's collaborating with us there at Grace Clinic to get a population for that. And this just shows that we served almost 2,000 unduplicated clients last year and about 3,500 client visits. And this is why it's important. It reduces emergency room use, provides culturally appropriate family planning services, allows people to pursue education and job training. The interesting thing about us is our care delivery model. The workflow and operations are organized around the staff's members' roles, ensures that each staff member works to the full extent of their education. So what this means is the medical assistants, they do a lot of education, they do a lot of intake, because by the time we see them as the nurse practitioners, they've already been counseled about STD, safe sex, they've been counseled about when they want to have children, they've been asked about intrapartner violence, they've been given all the different options for birth control, they do the CLIA wave testing, they administer the medications after we approve it. And so the clinic staff really are an integral partners with the nurse practitioners. It's basically shared responsibility and differentiation of roles. And we've been able to increase the number of unduplicated clients 50% by this, by this collaboration model between the medical assistants and the nurse practitioners. It's culturally competent care because even though I have worked with a Hispanic population for probably 30 years, being, you know, for my public health work. Still, of course, there's so much about the language and the culture that I do not know and do not understand. So I rely on them to help me understand what's going on, what some of the attitudes, because some of the things that the clients won't tell me, they'll tell the medical assistant in Spanish. And so we can work together to address any issues that might arise. And so when I've talked to the medical staff about, you know, I've told them I was going to be making this presentation, I said, let's collaborate on some of the things that you have been told that impact on women's decisions about birth control. And so they've told me that there's many misconceptions that people have during the initial intake that they have to clarify. Like one of the very big ones, one of the most important ones, is that menses are important every month. A woman has to bleed every month, because if she does it, she's not cleaning her body. And so the monthly menses is a way to clean the body. And if they don't have that monthly menses, it's dangerous. And so birth control that prevents that, like a Depo-Provera or a Mirena IUD, could cut back on that menses, and then that therefore it's dangerous because all those toxins build up. Another one, they say that it causes the weight gain. You know, the Depo-Provera is associated with weight gain, and that's because of all that blood building up is causing the weight gain. Well, you know, we know it's not that. It's an anabolic steroid. That's why they're gaining weight. But what they understand is the blood is building up. And that long-term use of any type of contraceptive causes infertility because they've, you know, gone without their any kind of having a child or getting pregnant for a long time. That means that they can't in the future. So they want to take breaks between contraception, and of course that always introduces the chance of unplanned pregnancy. Then some beliefs about cancer that the women bring forward. It's destiny. So why even bother to, you know, think about screening, because, you know, if they've got cancer, they'd just rather not know it because it's going to be destiny anyway. This is something interesting I'd never heard before, but this is what the medical assistant said. The women think that one good way to check for cancer is not a mammogram, it's to jump up and down and see how their breasts feel when they're moving. And if their breasts feel funny, however feels funny means, then that means that they probably have cancer. If the breasts jiggle and don't feel funny, then they're okay. So that's something that they have to educate women for. Family is very important. It's very valued. Family has more influence. You know, many times they'll come in and we'll talk to them about a certain kind of birth control and, you know, educate them about the risks and benefits. It's like, no, my sister used that and had this response, and therefore this won't work for me. You know, and it's like, well, but does your sister understand this? It doesn't matter. You know, my sister told me not to do it. So, and one thing is very important is personalismo, in creating a personal relationship, and that's one way to do some of the education is through a warm personal relationship. Another one is religion. It's very important to respect our client's religion, and that oftentimes feelings about religion influence sexuality and self-touch, you know, so if a woman has an IUD, she doesn't want to check for the strings because that would involve checking her cervix and touching herself. STI, sexually transmitted infections are only contracted from toilet seats, and if they haven't sat down all the way, then they're not at risk for it. And all STIs have obvious symptoms, and so if they don't have any symptoms, then they can't have an STI. So, you know, we have to do a lot of education about HIV and chlamydia that oftentimes don't have symptoms. Telenovelas are a heavy influence. And when there was a telenovela actress that had cancer, the women wanted breast exams, and then they wanted mammograms. And it's like, you don't need one. It's not an indication. Yes, but, you know, so-and-so had it without symptoms, so now I want it. So it's like there's both views, you know. I don't have breast cancer, or if I do, it's destiny, but somebody else had breast cancer and a mammogram found it, and she was safe, so I want it too. You know, all of this is what the clients are bringing forward. There's very little knowledge about anatomy, so, you know, we have to be very careful when we're doing our examinations to teach and to explain and to walk people through what's happening and how they can take care of themselves. We probably need to talk to them about some times that it's important to touch themselves and do self-examinations. So that's something to be culturally aware of. And the staff says that basically 90% of the monolingual Spanish-speaking clients usually have these beliefs. They're usually poorly educated recent immigrants, and so they're bringing much information that they have grown up with them. So the staff act like not only literally our interpreters in, you know, Spanish to English, but also our cultural interpreters who help me and some of the other nurse practitioners understand how to approach our clients in a sensitive manner. We collaborate on comprehensive teaching, and, you know, that's all part of our shared responsibility that then makes sure that the clients are getting the best care possible and they're getting care that fits them where they're at and meets their needs. And we need to realize that of all things about cultural beliefs, you know, sexuality, reproductive behavior, family planning, you know, creating a family, those are all very heavily culturally laden. And we need to be aware of that and realize that good care implies that we pay attention to that and deliver it in the most culturally sensitive manner. And then that's me. That's actually one of our medical assistants, but she agreed to pose as the client. But so we have such outstanding care that our clinic and our operations procedures are used as models for other Title X delegates in Arizona and outside the state. And we've had other Title X delegates come in and visit us and tour our clinic and look at our protocols and everything. So it's really a fun place to be, and that's kind of when I can get away from my job duties as associate dean and I go over and escape and be a nurse practitioner. So I'll take questions at the end.